Thank you for having me. Thank you, Mr. Wright. Our item number one will actually be tomorrow morning, our exhibition of the Hunter Education Instructor of the Year Awards will be made tomorrow morning. So we'll move to item number two, which is a public forum agenda item, and this item is an item in which the public can provide comments or ask questions of the commission. The commission's policy on this is to encourage the individuals to keep their comments to the five-minute limit. The commission then has the ability to schedule that issue for a future commission meeting and or ask the Department of Fish and Game to investigate the issue and report back to the commission. Our first speaker this morning will be Dick Knowles, followed by Paul Weakland.
Mr. President and board members, very briefly, I wanted to bring you up to date on a program that's been going on in Inland Mona County for the last 15 years. It's a water for wildlife program that has been supported by the Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management, Inland Mona County Board of Supervisors, the Fish and Game Commission Advisory Board, the Fish and Game. There's so many people involved in this. It's the installation of water systems for wildlife in the mountains. And we have had this program going on. We now are almost completed with it. I've got 100 individuals who work with me as volunteers. And last Saturday, as an example, I had 20 volunteers in the mountains. We installed the 20th of 21,000-gallon water systems for wildlife. And I tell you that you would be impressed with what responds to the desert environment that we have. That wildlife is there, but it has to travel miles for water. And we have been successful with funding, with volunteers. Edison Company donated, the Southern California Edison Company has donated equipment, has donated a helicopter five times to fly in equipment for us. We have the Department of Water and Power, the phone company delivering satellite dishes. I've got a photograph I'm going to give you. Delivering satellite dishes we use for collectors that are being salvaged.
But we're using them for collectors?
We just wanted you to know that this community effort is going on. It has been ongoing. The California Deer Association just started
a chapter here this month.
They will be taking over this program. The Quail Unlimited Group just started their program.
And they're converting old, I showed them how to convert old bird drinkers so that all wildlife could drink from them. And if you were familiar with the old bird drinkers, they were designed for animals to go in a little archway down to get water. I showed them how to dig a trench down the canyon and install one of these drinkers. And now 100% of wildlife drinks from these units. And in Inyo and Mono County, there are about 35 of those old bird drinkers, and they are aggressively converting those. And when we finish, we will have somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 big water systems available for the wildlife in our counties. And I just wanted you to know that this is going on over here and that we're very proud of what we do to enhance sustainable fish and wildlife resources.
Describe what they make. Are they ponding basins? Are they water tanks?
We purchased 1,000. The new units are 1,000-gallon tank. The satellite dishes are plumbed into the back of the tank for collection. The tank itself is a guzzler. I order these with a manway knot, and the animals can't get into the water. And then we pipe down the canyon. I developed a 55-gallon drum with a stainless steel tray, and in that tank is a brass float. And there's some are 13 years old and have been providing water for wildlife. And remember, that tank only has about a third full of water, so you don't have to worry about turning it off or freezing. If it freezes in the winter, it just freezes solid, and it doesn't break anything. In the springtime, it thaws back out, and it provides the water's there. And we have a maintenance crew. This is not like a federal organization that will, 10 years from now, it's no funding, we can't help it. This is an ongoing program. I've got children, 8, 9 years old, that started with me 13 years ago, and they're still helping me put these systems in. And so I thought, that's yours, I thought that you guys would like to understand that there is a program going on. There's a lot of enthusiasm. The counties, the towns, the town of Mammoth, the town of Bishop, everybody's been involved. And it is truly a community effort. I just thought you'd like to know that.
Thank you very much. I'd like to commend you, you personally and your organization's efforts. This is a great work. It really is. These basins that collect, now, do they also collect condensation as well, or is it just during the rainy season?
Those collectors, the only time the water's in those when it rains.
Okay.
The only time you have a little water that might collect is in if it snows, it'll start to melt a little bit, and right at the bung, where the adapter, it'll freeze right there, and then when it thaws out, it doesn't freeze down in the ground, it's just right at the top, and then there'll be a rush of water down into the tank. But otherwise, we've had no problems with them at all.
Wow. Very good.
Maintenance is minimal.
Thank you very much. Thank you for bringing this to our attention.
Mr. Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. I'd like to bring your attention to your marine management news that was put out in late April. It talks about the Abalone Recovery and Management Plan. But the Abalone Recovery and Management Plan is now in the lead agency of the Fish and Game Commission. That there will be two now special meetings. This is a change from what you agreed to in January. Now we're supposed to have two special commission meetings before the August deadline. Well, so far on your website, like it says here, these meetings are supposed to be advertised. They are not. When I called up to find out about these two now special meetings, not regular commission meetings as was agreed to in January, and then again in February, that things have changed again. According to Diane Waters, the Fish and Game Commission has lied once again. And then calling Jonathan Ramsey, the guy who put out this article, he says, oh, no, it's going to happen. This is the way it is. You can guarantee it. Well, if you're still looking for people to lay off, I'd say Jonathan Ramsey, Diana Waters should be your first ones, the conniving, deceitful people that keep putting out bad information. So what is it, gentlemen? Is it going to be a go?
Yes.
To trick you, Paul.
Yeah.
Mr. Weakland, first of all, the commission did not have a meeting in January. The commission at its February meeting indicated that it would have three special hearings on the ARMP. They will have those three special hearings prior to considering adoption of the plan at their late August meeting in Santa Rosa. As soon as those meeting dates have been finalized and meeting facilities have been secured, they will appear on the webpage.
According to Diana Waters, your Abalone team coordinator, she said now that that is wrong and the commission is not representing it truthfully.
I just represented the truth, Mr. Weakland. Thank you.
Also have some handouts here about how devastating and terrible farmed fish are. Here's some latest evidence that has been collected. I hope that you will have time and leisure to be able to read these things. Very important. Talking about the disease and parasites and the different problems that we have that don't want to be acknowledged by these large aquaculture facilities and hatcheries. Now, continually we try to bring up the fact that public comments aren't being answered. And on this issue, the public comments have not been answered since 1995. But we're still allowing opportunity for public comment, even though we haven't answered any of the questions. I would submit that if you would start answering some of the questions that are now 7 years old about some of the farm fish and the diseases like withering syndrome that devastated the abalone populations, we wouldn't have to continually keep asking the same questions over and over and over, year after year after year. Now we understand that the Disease Control Committee that was supposed to produce a large and lengthy report in 2003 has now been put off until 2005. Would you like to comment about that, please?
No, I have no comment.
Thank you.
Right, you got us. Anyone else, Bob?
No, but if you'd look at your handout material that was provided to you this morning, we have a fax from the Ocean Conservancy and NRDC, and I'm also passing out an email that I received from some squid fishermen They are asking that the commission take emergency action to establish a 12-hour-per-day fishery for squid in Monterey Bay during weekdays, basically starting at midnight Sunday night and through noon on Friday. The fishermen, there's I think a half a dozen fishermen that signed that email that was provided to the commission office, and then the Ocean Conservancy, NRDC, provided a letter supporting that request. I've asked the department to review this situation to see if there is a resource issue that we need to deal with and consider under your emergency regulatory powers under Section 240 of the Fish and Game Code. And I have not heard from the Marine Region. I don't know if Deputy Director Mastrip has had any indication of their evaluation.
Yeah, I did talk to Marine staff this morning. They have no way of judging whether this is an emergency or not to the resource. There's just no data at this point to judge it one way or the other. There is some pretty obvious realities that there's a lot of fishermen that have come into this area to fish the squid, partly because of the Southern California squid haven't showed up yet. So they're moving up north, and they're kind of crowding out the locals in Monterey, and they're not too happy about it. So it's literally about too many fishermen in one spot. The local Monterey squid fishermen are concerned that they're going to be over-harvesting the squid, not letting enough squid spawn before they're caught. Unfortunately, we have no data to say one way or another whether this is a real issue in terms of the resource yet. We're not opposed to taking emergency action, but just we can't give you any guidance right now from a resource perspective. It may be more of a fisherman issue than anything else.
That's what it sounds like. Are you so you'll keep an eye on it and then keep us posted as to?
Yeah, we are looking into it. It's just squid are a mysterious creature, and
like so many fish in the ocean.
Yeah, well, squid in particular, because of their life cycle, and in the dynamics where they show up and don't show up.
If we were to try to get data, I mean, what would be involved? I mean, it seems very involved.
What would be involved
to try to get some scientific data to either to support this suggestion or oppose it?
Well, unfortunately, because of their life history cycle, you know, being one-shot spawners, et cetera, and the fact that they disappear and show up or don't show up, you're probably looking at several years' worth of poking around in stinky squid and in the ocean to figure it out. We're not going to have an answer for you shortly. These things appear and disappear over the history, so there's no way we're going to be able to give you any guidance on a short term on this one. I think it really gets down to, do we want to spread the fishermen out or slow them down as a precautionary approach? We're not opposed to the proposal.
Do we have a cap on harvest right now? No.
Well,
yes.
There is a cap.
We do. And we have a limited entry.
Yeah, there's limited entry.
It's interesting to note that this is one of the few limited entry programs where quite a few squid fishermen pushed for a smaller fleet, essentially, greater restrictions. Mr. Sardina, who signed this letter, has called me a couple of times in the last 6 months arguing for less fishing.
Yeah, they don't want to blow it. They got a good thing here, and they don't want to muck it up, and they're willing to be conservative, and I think that is part of what their proposal is about, is because they know we don't know either, is why don't we just play it safe, give these squid a chance to spawn by keeping fishermen off the water for a certain amount of time. If that's my understanding of the proposal.
So the proposal is not to dissuade the guys, the newcomers in.
Well, they'd like to get rid of the newcomers too, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
But
that's probably a different issue.
Well,
that's probably to me that looks like the driving force behind this. But if we have a cap, and they're merely chasing the resources wherever the resource is.
Well, what we don't know, for example, the caps for California squid fishery.
Okay.
We don't know. Is this the entire population of squid in Monterey Bay right now, or is it the other population hasn't showed up yet? If it's the whole population and the cap's real, it's one of the things is that there's a certain amount of uncertainty.
Right. And the cap is pretty high relative to the historic landing data. In fact, it's higher, I think, than all but one or 2 years in the last 20 years, because we really don't.
Yeah, the squid fishery is one of the things we're still learning a lot about. And, you know, we're very supportive of a precautionary approach, especially if the fishermen themselves are willing to accept it, you know.
Well, some of them.
Well, some of them are, yeah. You're never going to get them all on one page.
No.
But my point is we have no biological guidance for you on this thing. We just simply don't know whether this is an impact or not. I wish we knew, but we don't.
Yeah, this isn't a limited entry per se. What the legislature did about 5 years ago was to put a moratorium on the issuance of new permits, and therefore anyone that purchased a permit in that year were able to stay in the fishery. The department has developed a draft fisheries management plan, which I believe they'll be presenting to the commission at your early August meeting in Long Beach. Part of that would be a restricted access recommendation. But as Deputy Director Mastra pointed out, the biological data right now in Monterey Bay is limited. As you'll read the email, the concern is historically Monterey Bay was a small fishery, about 14 or so vessels. And because the Southern California fishery off of the Channel Island area has really not come about yet this spring, that the vessels moved up, so there's approximately 40 vessels fishing in a limited area right now in Monterey Bay, and that's their major concern. They're concerned that by fishing them 24 hours a day, 5 days a week, that they're taking squid that are not even spawning yet, because some of the fishermen feel that the size of the squid are a lot smaller than historically. So, if you'd like, I'll work with Deputy Director Mastrup and the Marine Region and our legal counsel to and provide an update to you.
I don't have a problem with the suggestion.
Yeah, I guess the 12-hour, what I don't want to get caught up in is, you know, a group of individuals not wanting to share the resources with others because they think it's theirs. And I don't want to get caught up in that. So, and then other organizations jumping on the bandwagon and seizing the opportunity. So, all right.
Okay.
So you'll take the lead on this and work with the department and come back to us?
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
We'll follow up probably before our next meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'll provide a memo updating in the next 2 to 3 weeks with a recommendation of whether or not we take action, and then we can also discuss it further at the next Marine Subcommittee.
Can I ask a question of the department? Squid, I think, is number one or number two in dollar value fishery in the state. Do we have a research program in place? Are we going to, over time, start to fill in some of the blanks?
That's part of what the squid fishery management plan is about, is recognition that we need to invest more time into figuring out what's going on here, and that's the plan. And in the industry is very interested and they're very supportive because they obviously see the benefit in getting a better understanding of what's going on here. You know, some of the concern again, I think, is are we going to take the entire allocation out of the Monterey squid population, which might be too much, and that's some of the concerns.
Or might not be.
We don't know. That's the unfortunate part. But we'll get together with staff. We'll huddle and come back to you with some thoughts on that. We just got this, so.
Thanks. Okay.
Thank you. Our next item is item 3, and it's an update on the Commission strategic plan. Commissioner Chrisman will make the department, or excuse me, the commission's presentation, and then Mr. Weakland would like to provide some comments.
As we do at each of these commission meetings, we just use this item as a reminder to the folks here and following what the commission does, that we operate under a strategic plan that we adopted a little over 4 years ago, and it's on our website. We urge folks to take a close look at it. I mean, we put our mission and vision statement that came out of that strategic plan. It was an effort, about a six-month effort that involved a broad constituency of ours across the state of California, and it's really their plan that we adopted. And so, just so you know, it's there, and we urge folks to take a look at it, make suggestions, ask questions as a part of that process. Okay?
Thank you. Mr. Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. So far, after 4 years of the strategic plan, there's been no pointed examples or instances that have shown a benefit to the state of California. In fact, I'd like to point out a article that just came out in the paper. It talks about trust and rancor in California. Sacramento, a lack of trust is derailing the state. This is a continuing problem with one of the state's large political bodies, the Fish and Game Commission. And the strategic plan does not cover this. And the strategic plan does not cover any abuse of power.
No, we're not in that article.
Of course not.
Any abuse of power or any punishments for misinterpreting data, for lack of, what did you say, honesty in the facts that are being presented. Just like we were talking about the squid here a moment ago. We know that there's been over 25 years of study in the squid populations. There's even a very interesting program about the squid's life history off the Monterey Bay on the Discovery Channel. But according to the Fish and Game Commission, there's no studies ever been done. They'd only want to just now start looking into it without doing their homework and looking into the past studies that might very well answer these questions. But the strategic plan is not doing that. It's just another layer of bureaucracy for the fish and game to hide behind. Thank you.
You should instruct your staff to watch the Discovery Channel.
Yes.
Item number four is report by the Friends of the Sierra Trout on results of their study to reduce mortality on bait caught and released hatchery size and trophy trout. If the commission remembers, I believe it was 2 years ago when we were meeting in Bridgeport, we had a presentation by the Friends of Sierra Trout regarding the studies that they were conducting and also the development of a special hook, a Sheldon hook, that aids in the release of bait-caught fish. In your exhibit material are copies of their final report dated September 2001 and also the draft report dated February 2001. We have members of Friends of Sierra Trout here to make a presentation to you and talk about the result, talk about their study and the results of the study. We'll begin with Dick Knowles, followed by Steve Marty.
Thank you again, Commission and President. You have information. You were sent copies of Dr. Jenkins' final study. You have copies of our literature that we put out identifying the way you can release these trout from bait-caught fish and they will survive. You are aware that there is a video. Maybe you saw it, maybe you did not see the video. And this, by the way, was produced, was photographed by your Deborah Hamilton out of your Fish and Game organization. We really appreciate that. The final results of that, all of this work we've done for the last 5 years is significant, but I'd like to back up a little and give you an overview really quick of what has happened. 5 years ago, your Fish and Game department at Fish Springs and Mike Haney, who's in your audience, and Steve Parmeter, who is the wild trout biologist, recognized our concerns as bait anglers, what we were doing to our bait caught and released fish, and we were killing them. There's no doubt about that. But there had to be a better way because trout fishing is a major recreation, and we understand that. And here we are in the best fishing in the country, we think. So The Forest Service gave us a $25,000 grant. By the way, they were really cooperative on this. We got the Town of Mammoth Lakes gave us $10,000. The Fishing Game Advisory gave us funding. The Bishop Lions gave us $800. Numerous other contributions were made to get the funding necessary to purchase the help of a scientist and all of the other paraphernalia that you need to do this. Dr. Tom Jenkins studied hatchery and trophy trout at Alpers Ranch, where we are obvious, everybody knows trophy trout at Alpers, and at the June Lake Marina, where he could have cage-cultured trout to work with. The study has been reviewed, has been peer-reviewed now, and Dr. Tom Jenkins called me several weeks ago to tell me that it has been accepted, and it is expected to be published, hopefully, in November as factual. And I got to tell you that this, to us, is significant. It should be significant to you that we now have science that will show how we, using some simple processes, can, in fact, reduce, and I believe you have copies of these. We printed thousands of these, and they disappeared. But we feel very good about it, and we feel that it has a significant and will have a significant impact on the survival of our resource. And again, I look at your sustainable fish and wildlife resources. I think we're doing our best here in Multnomah County to provide that. And thank you very much. I just wanted you to know that we did do well on this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Knowles.
Good job.
Do you know what journal Dr. Jenkins' report will be published in?
I do not know. He's being very cautious. He wants to wait till he gets it in his hands, and I don't blame him.
No,
but you understand him.
Sure.
But this is going to be significant now. Do you normally get copies of this when it is published, or do you want me to get copies to you when? Because I'm planning on spreading them out.
Yeah, if you could,
I'll happily send
us a copy. I'd appreciate it.
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
Any more questions?
No. Thank you very
Thanks.
Much.
Steve Marty. I don't know what order the others. We have Mr. Rummel and Mr. Wright would like to provide comments also.
My name is Steve Marty. I represent myself as a business owner in Mono County. I'm also president of the Sierra Trout Foundation, a local nonprofit organization that has been working with Friends of Sierra Trout to produce the video, the publications, and also fundraising to accomplish all of these goals. I'm here today to put in front of you the concept that what we have created is a conservation tool in that catch and release fishing has been fairly limited to fly and lure, and we believe with this information that we have opened up that opportunity to bait anglers. The statistics and the scientific research shows that bait caught fish with gear restrictions can be in the less than 2% mortality rate. So we feel that this is an opportunity for the commission to use this as a tool to allow bait anglers who have been restricted from fishing in those catch and release areas to now participate in that. As a business person, a license agent for the state of California, we sell licenses at our business. I own the Twin Lakes Resort out of Bridgeport. License sales have dropped, and one of the comments that we get is that bait fishermen are restricted. The areas they can fish are getting smaller and smaller. We feel with this study, and once it is published, that this tool should be used to allow those bait anglers to now get involved in those catch and release areas. And the mortality on the fish will be a minimal. And also, I'm sure you're aware that a lot of the catch and release areas are stocked with fingerling fish because the pressures on those areas are so high by the catch and release anglers. So we aren't talking about a completely natural resource. As much as we would all like to believe that we are catching natural fish, a lot of their parents were raised in hatcheries and put in as fingerlings, catch and grow type program. So we feel very good about the work that we've accomplished. We're a 5-member group of people that just volunteered to do this. And we have worked very hard in raising money, getting interest, getting these studies done, producing a video, a handout, and we'd really like to thank the Fish and Game for their video folks that helped us produce that video, and all the support we've gotten from the biologists in the Department of Fish and Game. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your good work. Bob, do we have a copy of that video? I don't think I've seen it. Would you?
Yeah, Nick. I gave Nick a copy.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I do have a copy.
Nick took it home. We'll circulate
it.
Nick,
okay. It's Nick's apartment.
Mr. Rummel, and then Mr. Wright, followed by Mr. DeCroce, and then Mr. Weakland.
My name is E.J. Rummel. I am presently the president of Mammoth Lake Sport Fishing Association, and as such, I would like to welcome you again to Mammoth Lakes. I think this is the first time you've been here, and we're delighted to have you. Hopefully, you'll enjoy our 4 square miles of construction going on now, expanding the area. Mammoth Lakes, in fact, is 25 square miles, but we have that buffer zone so that we won't infringe on the wildlife and other areas of the wilderness area. I'm also a newly appointed commissioner for the Mono County Fisheries, which was recently created by our supervisors to provide a fishing experience to families worth repeating. Fishing is a big business in Mono County. It's probably the number one business. It brings in around $180 million to Mono County, and therefore we do whatever we can to promote that. The group that I'm involved in that's sitting here for the last 5 years on the Shelton Hook is absolutely delightful to me, having been involved with it. It's an experience that I would repeat many times. The problem we have, as I heard Commissioner Flores just mention, is that the resource that we have here, Mono County, is 3,022 square miles, and 5.5% is private properties. A lot of people come into this area feel that the resource belongs to them because of a significant way that they enjoy fishing. We promote all types as long as they're legal. And we have proven also that bait fishing can be released by this study that we're very proud of. And I'm sorry that Dr. Jenkins is not here at this time to be recognized, because he has done some incredible work and will do that in the future. Without getting into too many other details, my request to you is that in the package that you received has this little flyer. And I'm respectfully requesting that you give consideration of having this inserted in the booklet that tells us how and where we can fish in California. It's a valuable piece of paper, and if it's possible, we could point to that as a tool that this group behind me has worked for all these years, and we would find that to be quite an asset to the booklet itself. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wright, followed by Mr. DeCroce.
Yeah, it is really good. Yeah, it is. It's very good.
My name is William E. Wright, and I am here on this time to represent the Big Pine Chamber of Commerce and our community of Inyo County. What we looked for 5 years ago was that we went to meetings with campground hosts and campground commissioners. And these people told us there was a significant amount of trout being found in the dumpsters. We had some other people check around some of the places in town where, you know, tourists would come through. We found a lot of trout in just dumped in trash cans. We felt this was a terrible waste of our resource. And, you know, the state and the people worked real hard to produce these fish and some of the others. So what we would like to do is to get the, if we can get this, what, this is an educational tool. We want to educate the people on catch and release so that they can come up and catch trout and release them and someone else can catch them, would like to eat them, or something else. And even if they stay in our streams late in the fall, when the water gets a little low, maybe we've got some other endangered species out there that can eat them. We're not too worried about that. But what we'd like to do is increase this thing, because they tell me it's 1,600,000 or something for Mono County. It is the major moneymaker in Inyo County. And we are very, very interested in this. And what we need to do is to educate the public. So that's why we're asking the commission to maybe get this in the fishing regulations, so that we can educate the people to, how may I put this, to educate the general people. We think that 80% of the people out there, are over 80%, are bait fishermen. And a lot of them times are people who just come up short time. We have passed these out in all of our chambers. We've given them to campground hosts to pass out. So we're trying to educate on our side. And I think this would be a benefit not only to Inyo and Mono County, but to all the people of the state of California. Now, there's a lot of other areas that have the same situation we do. And I think that this would help all of the economies of all of our communities who have trout fishing. Other than that, do we have any questions?
No. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. DeCroce?
Well, I think I'll pass it now on to Thomas.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Weakland?
Pass.
Right. Commissioners, Paul Weakland. I am disappointed that Dr. Jenkins isn't here today, because I would hope that you gentlemen will express this thought when you do see him, that the study is incomplete because it does not express the chance of a variable or possibility that these hatchery-raised fish, these cultured fish, have a genetic altered capacity. They have different aspects and problems that will arise from releasing some of these types of cultured fish into the wild due to genetics, and that there's a mechanism in nature that allows a mass mortality of fish when there's too much genetic diversity. And the fact that the study just is noticeably absent of this possibility upsets me. Thank you.
Anyone else that would like to comment on this? Our next item is item number 5, and it's consideration of the department's initial review and recommendation on the petition to list the Scotts Valley Polygonium.
Actually, before we go, okay. The gentleman requested that we put this in our regs, so I just wanted to get some input from the department as to whether or not that's a possibility.
Put it in the book.
Can we put it in the book?
If we have money to print a regulation booklet, we'd love to entertain this. That's all I have to say.
But what?
So if there's a regulation book, this will be in the book.
This will be in the book.
All right.
Well, yes, we will see that.
They're leaving. They haven't heard that.
Yeah. I'll tell them.
All right.
This would be very useful information. Yeah. One of the things is I think I've mentioned before is we are trying to come out with more area-tailored products in terms of regulation information, and this would be, especially on this side, could be a neat tool to educate. Plus, given our other budgetary issues regarding hatcheries, if we can get people essentially to recycle trout, it may reduce our burden for stocking.
And we have the sport fishing regulations on our website, and I will see that this is put on our webpage.
Very good. Okay. Good. Mr. Pert?
Yeah, I'm Ed Pert, Fisheries Programs Branch, Chief Department of Fish and Game. Good morning. Oh, okay. Commissioners, just want to make a quick comment on the question about putting in the regs and having maybe this ultimately be a regulation that would be put in place. And the first thing is, obviously, the department would need to evaluate the research carefully. It's one study. There may be limitations. Dr. Jenkins is an excellent researcher. I'm familiar with much of his work. I assume that he did excellent work here. But we do need to look at that. So if the science clearly bears out that what was mentioned here is true, then we need to evaluate the use of this tool. So we're happy to do that.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Okay. Now to item number 5. As background, on January 9th, 2003, the Commission Office received a petition to list the Scotts Valley polygonium as an endangered species. Pursuant to Section 2073.5 of the Fish and Game Code, the commission reviewed that, commission staff reviewed that petition to see if it adhered to the format requirements and forwarded the petition to the Department of Fish and Game for its initial review. The department has reviewed the petition and associated information. The department has provided a recommendation plus a summary of their review of the petition, which the commissioners have in your analysis and as exhibits. Also, I'll point out that in your handout material today, you have a you have three letters from different organizations, one of which is Dr. Hayes, who submitted the petition. The letters are in support, and also I received a fax from the co-chair of the Santa Cruz County chapter of the California Native Plant Society, also in support of accepting the petition and going to candidacy. And with that brief introduction, I'll turn it over to the department for its presentation, and Ms. Showers will be making the department's presentation and recommendation for the commission.
Okay, Mr. Flores, members of the commission, my name is Marianne Showers. I'm the lead botanist in the Habitat Conservation Planning Branch, and I'm presenting the department's 90-day review of the petition to list Scotts Valley polygonum as an endangered species. I would like to present our evaluation. We have determined that there is sufficient information to indicate that the petitioned action may be warranted. And I've prepared a short slide presentation that I can show to you right now if you would like additional information about this particular plant. Would you like to see that, gentlemen?
Yeah, where's
sure.
This?
Yeah, you bet.
Be
okay. It'll take me about 1 minute to set
fine.
It up. Thank you.
Is it?
Yeah, there's like a beetle, there's a couple other plants called the family.
Right in that area?
Well, there's, no, there's a school there.
There's a what? Endangered species school?
Yeah. No, there's a school there.
There's a So, wouldn't you?
There's a lifetime losses cost.
For at our age, it's a lot. It's like 600 or something.
$600 at our age?
Yes. If you got my, I was supposed to buy my dog's last year, it was 300. It's gone up to 4.
Voila.
The cutoff eight is 9, I think. And it then jumps up when you hit 10. And then it goes back down when you hit.
I'm not 60 yet.
I think it's 60.
Is it 60 or 65?
It's not 600. It's
60.
It might even be 55.
Well, I might qualify. I don't look at it. I just don't remember. Where are we having dinner tonight?
Hot Creek.
I might be fishing. We'll go to the Moto Creek Inn, aren't we?
know, we can.
I'm fishing. Oh, wow. I'm not going to get up to you guys. It's costing me a fortune.
I don't know what's around here.
Lunch is next.
Oh, hey, there's right. The bakery. I want to go to the bakery for lunch.
The bakery we passed.
The bakery's very good.
We need to get Shots. Is it Shots? Shots Bakery?
Yeah.
Who's local? Shots, right?
Chili cheese bread.
There you go. There's our man. Okay, here.
Food?
Excuse us. We're talking about lunch.
I understand that completely. Okay, let's see if this works. Hopefully it will. All right, as I said, the department has evaluated the petition and has determined that there's sufficient information to indicate that the petitioned action may be warranted. The petition was submitted by Dr. Gray Hayes in January, as Mr. Trainer said, and we finished our review period in April. Okay, Scotts Valley Polygonum is a very, very tiny annual plant in the buckwheat family. The plant was first discovered in 1990 and described as new to science in 1995. The petition discusses a number of factors that support the proposed action. This tiny plant is only found in Scotts Valley in Santa Cruz County, California. All of the populations occupy less than 1 acre of habitat, so it's extremely restricted. And these small populations are highly vulnerable to impacts from both human activities and from random events. Scotts Valley Polygonum is restricted to areas of very shallow soils over rock outcrops that are surrounded by grassland. And you can see some of these outcrops as the bare areas that are surrounded by grassland. For example, that little patch of white up there. The patch sizes where these plants occur range from 5 feet by 5 feet, so 25 square feet, to the largest, which is 50 feet by 30 feet. This habitat also supports the federally listed Scotts Valley spine flower. Scotts Valley polygonum is known only from two occurrences on three parcels of private property in Scotts Valley. Occurrence one is located on the Polo Ranch, which is to the east of Highway 17. And I apologize that we're limited in how we can project these here. But Highway 17 is this dotted line that goes diagonally across this aerial photo. The most recent surveys in 1998 found 1,259 plants in 7 patches. Off-highway vehicles currently use the site and have directly impacted the polygonum and its habitat, and this area is also slated for housing development. Oh. Okay, now I'm in trouble. How do I go back? Except I can't do that with the laser.
Turn it off.
Is that it? Okay.
Well,
you know, I can't read from here.
Right there. Hit the button.
Come on. Ha! Okay, new technology. Thank you. Anyway, the second occurrence is in the Glenwood Hills, and that is this area over here. There are two separate patches on two different private parcels of land. One is owned by the school district. One is owned by the Salvation Army. High school constructed right in this area, this large white patch, eliminated about a third acre of habitat, and a recycled water distribution facility on the Salvation Army parcel, which is right here, also eliminated habitat. There was a small preserve set up by the school district to protect the spine flower. The polygonum also occurs there, but it's not a formally executed preserve with legal protection. There's also a conservation easement on the Salvation Army property that's never been finalized. The loss of habitat is essentially the greatest threat to the survival of the species. and a comparison of the two aerial photos, 1962 on your left, the year 2000 on your right, shows the amount of development that has occurred in Scotts Valley over the past 40 years. Because the polygonum was not discovered until 1990, we have no way of knowing how extensive or abundant it may have been in the past. We can only work with what we have now. However, extensive surveys and what appears to be suitable habitat has not found any new populations of plants. The polygonum is also at risk due to proximity to developed areas. As I mentioned, off-highway vehicle use directly impacts the plant, and you can see vehicle tracks going right through a population here. Construction activities have also fragmented the habitat and have changed patterns of runoff, leading to erosion, as well as leading to the introduction of non-native plants that would directly compete with the polygonum. Polygonum hickmanii, Scotts Valley polygonum, is listed as a federally, by the federal government as an endangered species. However, the federal status affords very limited protection on private land. The California Native Plant Society also considers this plant to be rare and endangered in California and elsewhere, but the CMPS list, again, affords no official protection for the species. Excuse me. I mentioned that there was no long-term legal protection in terms of a conservation easement or an actual preserve for this plant. Over-exploitation, predation, and disease do not appear to be significant threats at this time. The petition also includes a number of management recommendations. One is to preserve occupied and unoccupied habitat, to buffer the species against random events and encroachment from surrounding developed areas. And the other important recommendation is to finalize the existing management and land use plans that would afford some protection for this species. To summarize the important points of this petition, Polygonum hickmanii only occurs in Scotts Valley. All of the known patches of plants occupy less than 1 acre of habitat. The impacts to the habitat constitute the greatest threat to the survival of the species, and this tiny plant is highly vulnerable to random extinction events due to small numbers of plants and the very small sizes of the populations. In conclusion, we feel that there is adequate information to support the petitioned action, and we recommend that the commission accept the petition for consideration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions of the department? Is there anyone here to provide comments on item number 5? Seeing none, then.
Is there any opposition to listing?
Not that we have received, no.
Okay. Also move.
Second.
Go to candidacy.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Pronounced polygonum?
Polygonum.
Okay.
Polygonum.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to make sure our
executive director is. No, Mr. Trainer was very, very close. I mean, that's a very good pronunciation for someone who's not really familiar with the plants. Believe me, there are plants out there that I can barely pronounce.
We believe it.
It's better to realize that. Yeah. It was a few years since I've had botany.
Yeah, right. Of course, you remember that plant well, don't you?
It wasn't Fathom.
Oh, it wasn't.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
I'm
a lot older. Item 6 is consideration of the 2003-2004 California Duck Stamp and Ducks Unlimited Marsh Projects. The commission received a memo from the department dated May 13th, 2003, providing their recommendations for projects for 2003-2004. Commissioners have in your exhibit material a copy of that memo and a summary of the projects. I don't know if Deputy Director Mastrip or Mr. John Carlson will be making any comments on this item. No? Commissioners have any questions on the proposed projects?
Not at all.
Not at all. It's good.
I'm just glad the money's still there.
No kidding. Keep your hands off it.
Not being used, Bill.
That's right. Just keep your hands off the money. Just leave it right where it is.
I had like my federal fishing in the city money.
That's right.
I did have a question. I mean, I think these are great projects. I'm just curious, what's an automated trash removal system?
Garbage
know?
Trucks?
No, it says automated.
Yeah,
it says automated.
It's a guy. This guy picks it up.
So I'm interested because the Coastal Conservancy, along with the Water Board, install trash separation systems for urban runoff. So I'm just curious if this is like the kind. Do you guys know?
No, I don't we know. Don't.
Okay,
but
fine.
We can look into it for you.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the Santa Monica, there's a facility at the base of the pier that captures 500,000 gallons a day of dry runoff. And it separates all the big trash out of it, and then it treats it, turns it into reclaimed water. Yeah, it's a big issue in California cities.
Well, and considering a lot of our marshes get tail-end water,
yeah,
wouldn't surprise me one bit if that's exactly what it is. But we can look into it for you.
I'm just curious what system you're using. But I think these are great projects, and
very
happy to
project.
Move that we approve them.
Do you have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Was there any public?
There wasn't.
Okay.
Okay, item number 7 is the department's report and recommendations on its review of commission policies. This is the second of such items. The department, in your handout material, you have their report dated June 10th, and it actually covers three policies, the warm water game fish stocking policy, the season opening dates, and the training, testing, and trialing of hunting dogs. And Deputy Director Mastrup will make the department's presentation.
Yes, Commissioners, President, this is our second installment, as Mr. Trainer mentioned. You have the reports. The only thing I really have to say are about the first two season opening dates. Part of the report is to share with you any compliance issues or things that have developed. On the opening dates, those of you around a while back, we changed the sage-grouse opening date to a later period to provide some added time for the hens. So that technically violates the policy to open against the policy, but the commission accepted that. So that's the one area where we're out of compliance with the stated policy, but you obviously agreed with us when you approved the change in the sage-grouse season. The training, testing, and trialing of hunting dogs, there's been some recent code changes last year that we're working on implementing now, but that's the only change that's occurred, and it's not inconsistent with the policy. But we will be actually addressing the training of dogs as we visit next year, significant review of our wildlife area and ecological reserve regulations. There are some issues about compatible, incompatible use and how we kind of cover our expenses. So you'll be hearing more about this in the upcoming year involving use of wildlife areas. And the warm water is, I think, pretty self-explanatory. It's one of the few success stories. Any questions? And again, any preferences on what you would like to hear on the next batch of policy reviews, if you have any? Otherwise, we'll pick our next favorite set and give you the next installment.
Thanks.
It's very good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Very good.
pretty good.
Mr. Weeklin?
Commissioners, Paul Weeklin. I'm sorry to see that the policy review is so limited and minute. And my suggestion would be to, next time around on your little installment, have a policy that would cover public, the forum, and public comment periods. And it seems that continually public comments are put out, questions are asked, and never answered. Perhaps we could cover this in your policy. And I would also like to say that honesty is the best policy, and that policy is never put in print anywhere with the Fish and Game. Thank you.
If the commission desires to bring your policy on season opening dates current, I'll have an agenda item for your next meeting to make that change on sage grouse.
Real quickly, and it's totally up to you, obviously. Given Mr. Weeklin's comments about public involvement, one of the policies we haven't reported to you yet on is the Al Toucher Preserving Hunting and Fishing Advisory Committee. That's one of the significant policies of the commission, and it's also a significant public input vehicle. And that kind of addresses maybe some of Mr. Weeklin's concerns, like, you know, where do we have discussions? And if you're interested, we could put that on the next list.
That'd be fun, sir. Paul should be there, so don't invite
him. Okay, the next item is the department legislative report. This has been a sort of a standing item for each commission meeting. I received an email from Deputy Director David Bunn, who oversees the department's ledge office. I forwarded that email to the commissioners. I just received it, I believe it was yesterday, so I don't know if any of the commissioners had an opportunity to see it or not, but because of reductions in their staffing, they would like to discontinue a monthly report on legislative issues and just bring the high priority bills and discussions to the commission whenever they have information to share with the commission on the high priority bills that they're following. I don't know what the commission's preference.
You know, I'd be happy just to get from time to time an email list of the bill numbers, because I can look them up. You know.
I'll tell you what I'd like. They obviously, the department obviously prioritized the bills. I just like to see a list of the priority bills, kind of what they do.
What's the top?
The top few that, and on an ongoing basis, just so we kind of keep track of.
If we need to
highlight something, then
we could do that. We already create these lists.
Sure.
Our
yeah.
target
Absolutely.
Things. If you'd like a copy of those things,
whether or not we went in here.
No.
Well, I do. I think the department ought to be, somebody ought to be here representing the department's position and updating us on these issues.
I mean,
even if it's only just two or three items that are key, I mean, there's a whole bunch of legislation that's taking place that impacts not only the department, but the commission, as you will find out here shortly. So they need to keep us abreast. And in some cases, we have found out before the department has.
I think so, if the department told us what the priorities were, we could invite them to come to specific meetings to talk about them.
Yeah. Okay.
But, I'm not saying that we wouldn't do that. I'm just saying that getting the document reported at every meeting, I think, is more than they need to do for us.
I think Sam's right. I think, with that priority list that we've got, I mean, there are obviously going to be bills that jump at us. We're going to want more information. We can ask for a report.
I would have thought Dave would have wanted to come here.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, but there's more than just Dave. Julie and others that can come and report. So I just think that there's a whole lot that's just taking place. I mean, I'll give you a prime example that there are some issues. Well, the couple, they're trying to take the authority to for us to do what we've done in the last 7 months in terms of the alcohol recovery management plan. The legislature, in its infinite wisdom, thinks that it should be done a different way, as well as the petitioner. So, I mean, those are really important things that we ought to know about and be able to discuss openly and then take whatever action is necessary, which we have. So, I mean, so there's a whole bunch of things that are taking place that I think it's important. And maybe the department is knows, and you know, I don't know everything. I happen to be in the building all the time, so I just think it's important that they come here. I mean, and what I've seen in the last, since I've been on the commission, is slowly but surely, the folks from the department, they're diminishing. I mean, we have Sankey as a mainstay. Hats off to him, obviously. But we don't need to see the director. We don't see the deputy director. Now we don't see the legislative director. So there's got to be some accountability. And so I think we need to have folks here.
It goes more than the legislative report.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's my point.
The department, we can certainly provide you our, we have a watch list for legislation that we believe is significant to us. And from that, you know, as far as feedback, some of our folks, in particular the ledge office, not always sure that you're really interested. So if we can get some exchange on either, we can give you the short list or the watch list. And if there's things you're hearing or want to hear and you let us know, we'll have somebody here.
Okay.
I just sometimes we're not sure whether you're, you know, and they're busy, as you know, right now. They're right in the middle of it. So, but this is important to us that we share our concerns where we have someone, some of this legislation, because this has been an unprecedented year, and I have a feeling next year is going to be similar.
Sure. So a lot of these issues aren't, you know, that right. So just in slumber.
Well, my two cents is that I tend to agree with Commissioner Flores regarding the accountability of the department and so on. This year has been unique that the commission historically has requested from the department any information that they had on budget issues and or legislation where commissioners could assist the department in lobbying on those bills. And unfortunately, the commissioners, in most instances, has not been taken up on that offer. And I think this year, the commissioners have shown their interest in several bills, have written letters to the legislature in opposition to bills, and has testified at certain committees on the bills. And I think, you know, the commissioners are willing to provide their expertise and their political savvy to assist the department. And I think the department needs to really take the commissioners up on their offer. So that's my two cents.
Thank you, Bob.
Mr. Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. I believe this attempt to short list or shortcut will shortchange the people that observe the proceedings that go on here. And you will not have the accountability. I would like to point out something that sticks in my craw from years gone by. The fact that the legislature, in secret, without anyone knowing about the evil deed until it was done, about the offsetting and mitigating areas in the abalone fishery. And that in part of the management plan and the clause in the abalone fishing, that if an area was closed, an area of significant or equal worth and value needed to be opened up.
Now, this was done through the legislature with the Fish and Game and the Fish and Game Commission, but it was never put on any list. It was secretive, and it wasn't a priority for a couple of commissioners, so it wasn't a priority for anybody in the state. I don't believe that's correct or amiable. And that to shortlist and to shortchange would not be accountable. And I still have questions that I've asked over 5 years ago about how the legislature changed the offsetting and mitigating closures without opening another area in the abalone fishery. This was all done in a secretive manner by not classifying it as a priority. For me, that is a very high priority. But it was done in secret, it was over, and then did we start doing this legislative reporting that's going on now. And now you're going to change it again. Thank you.
I think, Mr. Weakland, you're asking the wrong body about the legislative actions on abalone. You need to ask your legislative representatives.
Sir, I've been to my legislative representative, and they continually point back to your body.
Well,
we're pointing back to
them. The legislature are the ones that closed the fishery, and so it's not the commission.
No, sir, the fishery.
They took emergency action to close it. The legislature has subsequently closed it by statute.
Paul, so, you know that.
And you know that.
You know that, Paul. Come on, just take a deep breath.
We've tried to educate you over the last 5 years, and you're not willing to be educated.
So do you want me to update you on the legislative, on these bills?
Yes, yeah. Please.
I certainly could. What about the legislature?
Like the budget one. Like the budget one.
Okay, well, I'll do the department's legislative report. AB 396 passed the assembly despite some There happens to be AB 396 is a Harmon bill which would open public land, or excuse me, private lands to the public. It's a bill, I believe, that would open up lands to all parties, not just people that fish, hunt, but people that want to hike. People want to get access to put in boats or to take boats out. Yes, Anki.
I think
you disagree with me.
Well, but you're going to add something to it. I want to talk about this bill. This is really an important bill.
No, I'm not going to disagree with you, Michael.
Oh, okay.
I just
disagree with me. Oh.
Do I look like that? That every time. I apologize.
No, I thought maybe I wasn't describing the bill correctly.
No, it's important to know it because you'll see some of the criticism of the bill has been misunderstood criticism. There's already public access on, or some of these activities are already occurring on these private lands. There's been some criticism that we're somehow trying to expand hunting. There may, in many of these cases, are lands that already have hunting on them. What we're trying to do is increase the number of people that would have access to this opportunity. The amount is probably not going to change necessarily, but it's also a program to encourage landowners working through NGOs who might not otherwise really want to mess with it. We're going to try and provide them a process by which we make it easier for them to do it. In other words, make it available. I mean, that's kind
of
the key.
And, I mean, that's the key. And the key here is, for the first time in my memory, with a bill like this, you have support of the private lands organizations across the state to try to make this work on a collaborative basis. I mean, This is a unique opportunity to increase hunting opportunities on private land. So, I mean, I really think it's something that we had a long talk about this at the Goucher Committee last week, as you know. But it's an important piece of legislation.
I think, as you were saying, it is a wonderful opportunity for the citizens of California. It's not just a hunting program.
Absolutely.
It could be fishing, bird walking, hiking to look at the Polygonium. A polygonum. Wrong one. I did it too. I mean, and I think there's some people who've labeled this darn thing already, which is unfortunate because it's every citizen in the state could benefit from this program, including the landowners.
And the thing is, it passed through the assembly overwhelmingly. It got through committee. It's in the Senate now. It is meeting some opposition. And there are particular individuals, API for one, is. And the Fund for Animals are against it. But they're also spreading misleading information about the bill. So we will deal with those issues and try to educate people on the real facts. It's a bill that I have not testified on, and I don't know that I will. But it's a
I think it's a good bill. AB 50 passed the assembly, and AB 50 is the caliber, 50 caliber gun. It really doesn't, the BMG doesn't necessarily have impact to us, but it is a bill that outdoors folks are watching. 89 passed the Senate. It's the what?
Ferret.
Oh, that's the ferret bill that passed the Senate, and it's currently being held at the assembly desk right now. So,
the amnesty bill?
I think it's more than amnesty.
More than amnesty. Yeah.
So we had some great concern about that. There's a tremendous amount of opposition for it. Obviously, the impact to waterfowl, decimated basically waterfowl in New Zealand. So
we need more invasive species.
Yeah. Well, if you know anything, I need some sort of water plants. Yeah. Go for that. AB 992 was the munitions tax that currently is dead. There were not enough votes, and the author pulled the bill. AB 342 is, you have to remind me on 342, Nick.
The bear bill.
Oh.
How can you forget that?
That's your bill.
AB 342 was the, AB 1190 was the dove hunting bill, which would ban dove hunting in the state of California. That bill was pulled by author before it was even heard. A tremendous amount of opposition to it in the outdoors, unions, a whole bunch of folks, including this body wrote a letter in opposition. AB 342 was the bill to ban the use of dogs while hunting bears. This is a bill that I testified on and that the commission wrote a letter in opposition to. This is a bill that would have taken basically the authority from the commission to make the decisions whether the use of dogs would be illegal or not. And again, our point of view was that this body should maintain that authority and maintain jurisdiction over that subject. And at the end of the day, we won. The bill died in committee. So,
great report.
Thank you.
Good job, Michael.
I don't know. Do we want to segue into? Okay, great. Thank you. All right. Tell Bunny owes me a month's salary for that. Item number nine.
Okay. Receipt of department informational items. A, update on budget.
What do I say? We're broke. We are actively, and we reported some of this at the Altoucher Preserving Hunting and Fishing Advisory Committee. We are currently figuring how to implement the reductions in the governor's budget, which will be adopted someday in the near future. We've also are being currently challenged to come up with additional reductions in some of our other funding. We've been asked to come up with a plan to reduce $1.8 million in our ELPF funding, which, you know, it's getting ugly now, uglier than normal. So we continue to be eroded budgetary-wise, and compounding that, of course, is the hiring freeze, and we're losing a lot of senior-level staff due to retirements and people that can't take it anymore. And that's impacting our ability to operate, even with the money we do have. So we're trying to prevent this thing from just spiraling out of control, but we'll keep you updated when we have concerns. We're meeting with constituent groups to figure out some creative solutions. Like, I'm not sure how many heard about the destruction at the Crest Ridge Ecological Reserve in San Diego County. We had some clever individual decide to build a dirt bike track in the middle of our ecological reserve with a bulldozer. We're acquiring lands. We don't have the wardens to protect them. And we're looking at community outreach programs to kind of adopt an ecological reserve, at least get the community to help support us in protecting these areas. you know, we're looking at adopt a hatchery kind of program to help Michael Haney's staff run the hatcheries where we can. So those are the kind of things we're working on right now to kind of mitigate the loss in our budget. That's all I really have to add. If there's any questions, I'll try and answer.
Thank you very much for the report. Commissioner Chrisman and I are, you know, heading up that subcommittee on the budget. I think it's time for the director and yourself and Mr. Harris to brief us once again as to where we're at since last time. So if we can get
at the next meeting? Or
remember we did a subcommittee?
Okay.
We could set that up.
Okay.
Work with Bob and setting that up. That'd so we can see where we're at.
It'd be wise. I think we have concerns about the next step. It's getting to the point where I think we're going to have to jettison whole programs. And if you have any guidance as what programs we ought to sacrifice, we need that input now as opposed to telling you later and you decide, whoa.
Yeah.
Marine MPOs.
Yeah. But, I mean, things like that. Where do we go? Where do we cut next? And I think that's a discussion worth having. And also, we can reach out to you as commissioners to see if there's anything you can help or make you aware of a significant issue. Maybe you can help us deal with them. So.
Okay. Thank you, Sankey.
Okay. Item B is an update on the Marine Life Protection Act. The department provided a one-liner, which is in your analysis, that it is developing a draft budget proposal to implement just elements of the MLPA. Mr. Wheatland wants to provide some comments on this one.
Commissioners, Paul Wheatland, you've heard it before, but it's still on the agenda. I'd like to take to instance to bring up the Abalone Recovery Management Plan. Legislation dictated that the management plan had to be received on or before January 1st, but the Department of Fish and Game missed their deadline and didn't turn in a management plan or anything until February. Now, let me tell you that if a fisherman missed a day, one day, to pay his fees for his fishing licenses, he would be penalized. He would pay punishment. But Fish and Game, they never, when they miss their deadlines, there's never any punishment. So that's why it's consistently a standard operating procedure. There's no punishment. Well, we'll just do it again. We've done it before. Well, yeah, it just keeps on happening. Part of the problem with the credibility, lack of honesty. Now, if a fisherman one day before the season is caught fishing, oh, he is summarily punished. But Fish and Game, they just do things haphazardly. We have these dates, but they really don't mean anything. But if you're a fisherman, the dates are like etched in stone of biblical proportions. But where's the accountability for the fishing game? Thank you.
Since you're up there, why don't you just speak on the next item, the Channel Islands monitoring?
I'd sure like Mr. Flores to be present for that. Yes, sir. All right. On these marine protected areas, we had 104 marine protected areas in California, some of them going back to the late 1950s, early 1960s. But out of the 104 marine protected areas, we cannot point to one showing credible evidence that they were a benefit the way that they were conceived. There is no evidence, even though for 30 years we have said some of the long oldest and largest marine protected areas of anywhere in the world. But there's no credible evidence to show that these long-standing, large marine protected areas have any benefit like were purported. I have questions about marine protected areas. First, how can you afford to do such a thing? Second, how does a marine protected area or close an area to fish and protect the resource from pollution or agricultural runoff? It does not. How does closing an area to fishing protect it from oil spills? No. Overpopulation of seals and sea lions, a failed federal policy. Already the feds have admitted that it's a failed policy. How does it protect the resource from this? It does not. How does closing an area to fishing protect the resource from otters outside their containment area? Another admitted failed federal policy. How does closing an area to fishing protect it from storms or climatic events like El Nino? Not. How does closing an area to fishing protect it from poaching? Doesn't. Or lack of enforcement? No. How does closing an area from fishing protect it from botched experiments like the outplants and withering syndrome? Not happening. How does closing an area to fishing protect the resource from unethical scientists and grant-sucking parasites? It does not. How does closing an area to fishing protect it from mismanagement? It does not happen. How does closing an area from fishing protect the resources and the economics of the people that rely on these fishing opportunities? It doesn't. Those are just a few. I have plenty more. Thank you.
Should just stay up there.
We just have to finish the date. Is he, what else does he have?
The department would like to add, we will attempt to provide answers to all those questions. It just may take several lifetimes.
Item D, update on the Coho recovery planning process.
Oh.
As requested at the last meeting.
Oh. Now we're going to get it.
Now you're going to get it.
Well, Joe has something to say about this, too. Maybe Joe might help him.
I don't think so.
Well, Joe can join me. Good morning, I think. It's still morning.
Yes.
Mr. President, commissioners, and staff, I'm Gail Newton. I'm in the department's Native Anadromous Fish and Watershed Branch, and I'm the team leader for the Coho Recovery Project. I'm here to report on what's happened during May and June and to give you more details than I think have been provided the last couple times. At the May 29th meeting, the Coho Recovery Team completed the watershed recommendation portion of the task, whereby we're looking at 117 different watersheds within the range of Coho and providing recommendations on a watershed-specific basis. Those watersheds are contained in the larger 22 river systems within the range. These recommendations address issues such as large woody debris, stream temperatures, sediment, barriers, other things that might limit Coho production. Currently, the total number of recommendations on watersheds is just under 400. In addition, the Coho Recovery Team has put together a series of statewide recommendations that deal with issues that are general and not specific to watersheds for the whole range of the species. There's now 186 of those. All these recommendations are further refined through an email exchange, and according to our ground rules, they're all currently preliminary and will be finalized at the final negotiation meetings in July, mid-July. Some of the other major milestones that we've hit as of late is we developed the recovery criteria, and the Coho Recovery Team conceptually adopted the framework. There are six criteria in all. The first five deal with delisting under CESA, and the last one speaks to recovery of the fisheries, because this is a very important point to the Coho Recovery Team. While there are not numeric targets in this framework for recovery criteria, we're hopeful that through the federal process, which the department is also involved in, because they're also doing a recovery plan for these ESUs, they're looking at population viability analysis and will be developing numeric targets, and we hope to be able to adopt those into our framework prior to the final adoption of the document. We also went through a watershed prioritization scheme, and we prioritize the watersheds based upon opportunities to maintain and recover ecological refugia, the best populations, looking at which ones are most at risk, and provide a ranking system for guiding management actions among these watersheds. And the third was to look at barriers, because removing a barrier to migration can be one of the most effective means for providing additional habitat for the species. So there are map products out there that help with this three-tiered approach at looking at prioritization. Another issue is integration of the Scott Shasta Recovery Team with the statewide recovery team. At the May 14th and 15th meeting, the Coho Recovery Team discussed an integrated timeline to bring the two products together. The first step of this began at the May 29th meeting in Reading, whereby the Scott Shasta team presented in outline form their recommendations. And once again, recall that the geographic scope of the Scott Shasta team is the agricultural lands in those two valleys. They identified eight solution categories, and the working groups on those teams are continuing to work with these recommendations. And they spoke at length, though with the number of recommendations, it was very quick for each one, to the Coho Recovery Team. There's a strong emphasis on voluntary incentive-based measures in these watersheds. Further integration of the statewide portion of the recovery plan in the Scott-Shasta valleys, the component, will happen in July and August. And one of the most important things that I can say, or one of our most important accomplishments that I can't enumerate, but I really do think it is a major component, is the level of commitment that all the team members have shown. Joe Blum can attest to the number of hours it takes to prepare for each meeting and the amount of materials that he needs to review. And all the members are working very hard, and they are putting in the time for their homework. Some people have said that it's taking up 50% of their work time to keep up with this. It's a lot to accomplish in a very short amount of time. And I think it's really important to point out that all the different people from the different interests are being very respectful, listening to everyone's opinions, and working within their ground rules. These meetings can be very long. 12 hours is the longest so far. I think July might go a little long. And they're very intense, but everyone is fully committed to coming up with a plan that will recover Kelvo salmon.
When's the next Shasta, Scott? In July sometime?
I brought all my materials in case you had questions like this, but I gave up on the briefcase concept. I have this large cardboard box with binders in it, and I do have their schedule out the truck. I don't know it off the top of my head.
I want to attend the next one, so they are having, I don't know if my other commissioners want to go with me. But
okay, I can look it up. But they are having a public meeting on July 1, and there's going to be a press release put out tomorrow with regard to that meeting.
Never talked about that.
Right.
And do you know where that's at?
No, it will probably, usually it's in Wairika. I can get Bob Trainer the information on that.
Okay, good.
How much of the watersheds are public land and how much of them are private land?
Sam, that's a horrible question.
I know.
Yeah. If you look, we look at this by the two different ESUs. And if you look at the Central Coast ESU, which is Punta Gorda South, and you look at where the coho salmon are, there's almost none on public lands. It's got to be private lands. We can't recover these species without the private property owners, which is why it's so voluntary-based and incentive-based. Mm-hmm. Up on the north, from the Oregon border down to Punta Gorda, there is much more public land. However, once again, it is a coastal species, so a lot of the coastal runs are on private property again. There is some federal land there. So, you know, the moral of the story is we have to have the private property owners involved, or it won't recover.
I'm curious, and I don't know whether Zonke or somebody's probably wanted to answer this, but I've been reading where there's a legislative effort to change the makeup of this committee and change the people sitting at the table. And if it's going so well.
You'd like a legislative update?
From a private property owner standpoint. And then I hear from the representatives of the private landowner groups that it's tough, it's hard, it's long, but you know, it's a fair process, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
So I'm curious as to who's pushing this and why.
Well, I can tell you something.
I know, but I'm...
I'd rather Michael Flores do it.
No, he really wants to answer this.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What's the change? I'm curious of the dynamic.
Well, what's changed?
Which change are you after?
The one that's in the
budget.
The amended bill?
Budget amended bill, right.
It's also in the budget.
Conference committee.
Right.
Yeah, but there's also a change to change the makeup of the people actually at the table negotiating.
Well, that's what it does.
That's what it does.
The funding source takes it out. It apply. What it says is, you won't get funding unless the petitioners then have the ability to name who will sit on the negotiating table. So that my question to you was going to be, are things going awry so much that the petitioners would sort of, you know, go around behind our backs and sort of end run us on this, or they, you know, happy participants from your observation?
Are they in the meetings? Are they participating?
The answer is, you know, yes, yes, and yes. I mean, it's really painful. It's very difficult. We've got absolutely opposing opinions and issues and backgrounds sitting at the same table trying to come to agreement on very, very specific language. And I'm not going to say that everyone holds hands and sings kumbaya all the time.
Because we don't believe you.
but I can say that everyone you know, is there. They do participate. They are respectful. You know, we have our moments. And that we work very hard at it. It's not easy. We've got the petitioners, we've got Sierra Club sitting next to the California Foresters Association. It's not easy. So I don't want to paint a rosy picture, but it is working.
Can I say something to that?
Sure.
We do sing Kumbaya.
No, we don't.
When you're going. Joe Blum on behalf of NOAA Fisheries. On the issue that one of the two of you raised, I was not directly involved, but there was there's a timber task force that gets together as a part of
a working group.
This issue became a very, very pointed issue. The issue of whether the petitioners would have veto, basically. And the timber folks were prepared to walk out of the working group. But they vetted it. And they apparently went eyeball to eyeball and said, did you, petitioners, meet with your legislative counterparts and get this language in there? And again, not speaking for the timber industry, but enough trust was developed and enough respect for the answers to that question that the meeting proceeded and some recommendations are going to come out of that group. So the conclusion I can reach is at least at that point in time, there was satisfaction that it was not an attempt by the petitioners to undermine the process. And in the past, you know, when the coastal recovery group was together several years ago, this type of issue would have caused everybody to go home and not talk again. This time, they stayed at the table, they talked it through. There's been enough of a relationship developed over the process that Gail and you folks have developed that it worked out the way you would hope it would work out.
At least they're still talking.
But somebody did something, or the legislation wouldn't have
been still in there.
But who that was, I, you know.
Yeah, then why didn't the petitioners go and ask the legislator to pull that budget language?
That's an unrealistic request, I think. I think you don't want them at the table at all on that. That's my view.
So the petitioners said they weren't the instigator of that language.
That's what they said. I would also like to say, and Gail's given a lot of credit to the people at the table, and you have to. I mean, this group, there are intense sessions. Sometimes I have been unruly.
But, no.
That's what I've been told.
Really?
But the department has done a heck of a job. And the department doesn't get credit frequently enough for doing a heck of a positive job. They have taken a lot of data and made it understandable to a lot of people who you know, don't live with this stuff every day like some of us do. They have been willing to stay long hours to answer strange questions and good questions. And I just can't say enough for the effort that they have put into the process. I don't know that it's going to work in the end. You know, nobody does. But I can say that this time, people are still at the table. People are still trying to make it work. If it falls apart, it'll just be one of those things that, you know, you just can't reach agreement on some stuff. But I don't hear anybody saying, we're getting ready to walk. And the department is playing a major role. And Gail, in particular, is playing a major role in a very professional operation to try and get somewhere in this thing. So we're optimistic. We still would take the position with you folks and with anybody else that asks, we need this plan as a part of our recovery plan. We have every reason to believe that it will be successful and that we will be able to adopt enough of it in our plan that the two will mesh. And so, you know, what more can you say at this point in that process? Not much.
Thank you both very much.
Joe, does your polo shirt mean that the name change is now complete and in case it's no official?
The organization voted and said, since I get lost a lot,
this is Sacramento.
That I ought to have a shirt that gets me back home.
Okay.
If I get lost.
Good reason.
It's a nice shirt.
Yeah.
Do you want me to give my 2 minutes now or not?
Sure. Go ahead.
So that you can go to lunch and go on your field trip. First is my shirt. And that is that we remain a region. We are not going to be merged with the North. Hawaii has become its own region. They are doing everything, including budget stuff, as of a week ago. They have advertised for a full-time regional administrator in Long Beach. That closes the 7th. It's a senior executive service position, salary range up into six figures. And we're looking for outside candidates if anybody wants to go to Long Beach and spend some time running NOAA fisheries. So they're very serious back east about having this region remain. The region may someday call it the California region of NOAA fisheries. So, as you know, there's a council meeting going on simultaneously with this meeting. I got a brief update from Rod last night, Rod McGinnis, the acting regional administrator, that Bocascio may, there may be some action taken on Bocascio. Whether they did late yesterday or not, Rod didn't know, but they were talking about changing the 20-fathom line to a 30-fathom line for California, which, you know, is not a huge difference, but maybe some movement, and whether they did it or not, I'll be able to report on when you get to that issue tomorrow. The other and final thing I would say is we all know that we're data poor. The department and NOAA Fisheries on coastal salmonids came together and put together a proposal to the department for the Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Money, received the money, and are working on a three-year project to develop a coastal salmonid monitoring protocol program. It's off and running. It started June 1st. We are doing parts. Your agency is doing parts. We will be contracting to third parties for parts. And the idea at the end of the three-year period is to have a protocol that all folks that want to do salmonid censusing, monitoring, and tracking will be working from the same protocol. We can come to you. We can come to the legislature. We can come to Congress and suggest that, you know, this, for this to be successful, we need a long-term funding commitment. And actually, my really last item is California is going to get about $13 million again this year of the Pacific money. We are keeping 1% for administrative work and to develop a database. One of the things that Congress was, when they originally funded, said, no one, fisheries, stay out of it. This is state funds. You just pass it through. Well, they sort of forgot they said that, and the last time they talked about it in the budget, they said, you will have an accounting and reporting and oversight role. And so the 1% is to develop that. The database to track the projects, all of the states and tribes have been working together to come up with that, and it will happen. So, but again, you guys get about $13 million, a little more than $13 million this year.
Where are we on the data, on the recreational data collecting?
I have no update from the last time we spoke, but I apologize. I assume since I haven't heard anything, and maybe you haven't heard anything, maybe Mr. Trainer hasn't, but it must be on track, or we would have been well informed otherwise. So that's a poor answer, but I will try to get something for you by tomorrow.
Yeah, we need to ask a question internally. I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah.
Your report just
2 months.
Your report just reminded me of it, and I haven't really heard anything.
It's been at least 2 months since I heard.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
You're pretty sly because
I jumped ahead of
you. Well, yeah, and I noticed you threw in our field trip, but I'm sure you brought your sticks. Did you not?
Your what?
Your sticks. Golf clubs?
That was at 6 this morning.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
You've got a chance of going to get another 18.
Yeah, right.
Thanks, Joe.
I believe we're concluded with the department informational items, unless Zonke has any more.
I think we have one more.
There's no update.
Oh, commission information items? What's that?
10.
Oh, excuse me. I thought we had 10. Oh, sorry. I'm mistaken.
Okay. Item 10 is commission informational items. The first one is a Marine Subcommittee report. The meeting that was scheduled for May 30th had to be postponed, and it's now scheduled for July 31st. Mr. Weakland would like to provide comments under this item.
Well, since there was no meeting and no report, it's kind of hard to comment.
That's
just kept you from doing it before.
Yeah. Thank you. All right.
I was going to comment.
Oh.
That's what you want.
That's not what I want.
Commissioners, Paul Wheatland. The Marine Subcommittee. When I first started coming to these meetings, there was no Marine Subcommittee. We discussed all those at the commission meeting. It was a lot better for the public. But now we have seen fit to create more committees, more meetings, more time to go different places and report. But they still cover the same stuff. All right, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Wheatland, the legislature established in statute as part of the Marine Life Management Act that the commission establish a Marine Subcommittee. So we have complied with the statute.
And you're invited to every one of the meetings. You can come to them, you can participate, and you can... Okay.
Item B is a report on the Altauscher Preserving Hunting and Sport Fishing Opportunities Advisory Committee. That meeting was held on June 12th in Lone Pine.
Man.
Yeah, we had a great meeting. We already one of the issues I discussed was AB 396. The Altauscher Subcommittee, they have a legislative branch, has taken a lot of positions on legislation. They continue to do so. Commissioner Christman updated us on working with the state of Colorado. Currently, Colorado requires that you show a hunter safety certificate before you can get a non-resident hunting license. And we're trying to establish a relationship with Colorado, which would permit an individual just holding a California license the ability to get a hunting license, correct?
Yes, to do the same thing we do to other states.
Right. The committee is constantly watching potential department budget and and advising the department. You know, anytime they're impacted, in terms of how the cuts would impact the outdoors community, they want to be kept abreast of that. But it was certainly a delightful meeting in terms of, I think we've made a lot of progress. They have produced a lot of resolutions. They've advised the commission on a whole host of issues. Mike, I don't know if you want to add to that.
Well, yeah, and they're following up with the their individual legislators. I mean, they're working on bills. The legislative subcommittee is very active, and these folks through their various organizations. I mean, they're focused, and they're, you know, again, making a difference through involvement to get their points of view across, right. And it's gratifying.
In terms of AB 396, they're right. Stepping up to the plate. As NGOs to help facilitate, you know, the legislation if it's signed and passed. So they're going to step up the plate, and they're also looking at maybe potentially helping with the efforts to maintain hatcheries. I know that folks in the hatchery, their subcommittees, looking at devising new ways of running hatcheries, and maybe we use a volunteer force to help the department. And I think that's the direction the department's going to have to go, faced with the budgets or lack of you know, adequate funding. So I think what's important is these organizations want to help. The Rocky Mountain Elk Foundations of the World, the Turkey Federations, and all those organizations want to step up to the plate, pretty much like the gentleman this morning with their project in trying to educate people on catch and release. So there are a lot of organizations out there that want to do their fair share, and then even more. So this committee is doing great work, and will continue to do so. So, and I'd like to thank the department for being there and being supportive and providing information.
Yeah, really good, you guys. Zonke, you really need to be complimented for the not only your own effort, but staff's effort in terms of making it a very helping to make it a very substantive effort on everybody's part. I mean, very good.
We appreciate it. Actually, this is going to sound like we're all patting each other on the back, but we do appreciate the opportunity. The department's always looking for ways to connect with, you know, the public. And this is a very wonderful, informal way to do it. And as you notice, all those people that showed up wanted to show up. We had a whole, you know, van full of department employees that were very excited to attend the meeting. And
yeah,
we appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Okay.
I think we have one more additional item.
Before we get into that one, on June 13th, there was a County Fish and Game Commission meeting in Southern California. Commissioner Chrisman has attended these in the past. Mr. Duffy attended this one on behalf of the commission, and he has a short update on that meeting. Their second meeting for this year, I think, is scheduled sometime in November up in Yuba City.
Go ahead, number one.
And Mr. Traynor stole the biggest part of my report, which will be their November meeting in North. Generally speaking, their attendance was down because of the late timing for the meeting in the fiscal year. But the one thing that they did express is that their relationship with Fish and Game is slowly eroding, and it may have related to some of the concerns you've expressed, people just not being able to show up at their meetings. And a lot of times the L.A. County gave an example of their project funding that they've done for bighorn sheep work in Los Angeles County, where the state has not been able to provide funds. And they were not pleased with the nature of the cost accounting reports that were delivered to them, which were basically unintelligible to them about where the bighorn sheep funds have been. So generally speaking, an improvement in communications is something that they would really like to see. The other thought that they put forth, and I explained this some to Mr. Traynor, there are a number of individuals on the County Fish and Game Fund committees who have spent a tremendous amount of personal time and effort over the years at promoting the benefits of the resource. And they would appreciate a recognition from you of some of those individuals. And,
sure.
And Mr. Traynor has his names.
Well, absolutely. Be more than happy to do it.
They do good work at the local level.
Exactly.
Really,
so I'd be, you know, and I'll go and present them.
Yeah.
So,
great.
No problem.
In fact, if you can work with something perhaps for November, that would
sure.
be great.
Okay.
And they did appreciate us.
Is there anything else you want to tell us, John? Okay.
Just thought I'd check.
I have shirts available for sale.
Thank you, John. Anything else?
I have another item, and it goes back to our April meeting where the commission discussed the Marine Region's list of priorities, and there were several priorities that basically were removed from the higher A list down to the B or C list. There was an offer made by your staff that if the department loaned a senior position to the commission office, we would complete the list of rulemaking activities that were being proposed by the end of the year. I followed that up with a memo to the director the week after the meeting and requested a response by the end of, actually by the 18th of April, and your staff has not heard from the director regarding that. I know Marine Region has shifted some of their priorities around. They are looking at doing a couple of more rulemaking, one on commercial surf perch and one on rock crabs. On both of those items, When those issues came up to the commission last year, the department indicated they didn't think that the commission had clear authority to adopt regulations. So the department was asked to amend one of their cleanup bills to provide that authority to the commission. The commission received that authority the first of the year, and now because of department priorities or change in priorities, those actions were not going to be completed, and I don't believe that is fair to our constituents who ask us to make those changes in regulation. We got the authority, and now we are not going to act on it for at least a year or longer.
Oh. So am I understanding you correctly that the department is setting our priorities for us?
Well, they provide the the regulatory documents in the draft language on your rulemakings. And these were part of the rulemaking calendar, which your staff submitted to the Office of Administrative Law at the end of January to indicate what rulemaking activities the commission was going to be pursuing this year. And 2 months after that calendar was submitted, we were informed that that's not completely an accurate picture of our activities for this year. And I understand the budget situation and so on, but to try to be more receptive to our constituents when they ask, the sea urchin people were another group that came to us and asked for changes 5 years ago, and we've put them off. Your staff took it upon themselves under our existing staff to develop the proposed changes, working with the department.
And working with the industry.
And working with the industry. And you have proposals in front of you, which you will consider adopting at your early August meeting. And the request made in April was one of sincerity, trying to take the burden off of the department.
Let me stop you, Bob.
Okay.
If I'm to understand you correctly, we've made a request to the department, and I know in times past, if they have labor issues, shortages, we work with them, but they don't have the ability to then say no. If we've asked for something, then it should be completed. And so I have a real problem with that. If they're going to come back and say, "Well, no, we don't want to do it," so is that what you're telling me? Is that we've instructed them, we've made a policy decision to do something, and they're saying they can't complete it? If that's the case, it's unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, we had the discussion.
What happened was at the April meeting, they presented the ABC priority list, and Bob offered if they would furnish it with the help, and we passed a motion. Did that take place?
Okay.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, then we need to hear from the department as to why it hasn't been followed through.
I don't even know where to begin, but I'll start somewhere.
And I don't want to put Zonkey on the spot because...
I can't answer all the questions, and those are fair questions. The urchin issue, certainly the initial reaction from Marine was... That ain't right. But they have since come around, and they are now working with industry. My understanding is they've totally come around on that issue.
Well, that's because we had a representative from industry stand up and volunteer, and we said, okay.
We like those kind of partnerships.
That's right.
And we are looking for those. And my report from the Marine folks, specifically on the urchin, is with John Duffy apparently leading the charge, organizing it, the industry kind of doing a lot of legwork. We're comfortable with this. I mean, part of this is also recognize a training exercise to retrain the department's attitude about how it goes about doing some of its business. There's a fair amount of trust building that needs to occur in terms of, you know, is this a safe thing to do in terms of a regulatory resource question? Getting to the list of priorities, that presentation to the commission was simply the Marine's opinion about all the things that have been put on its plate and what it believes are the most important, and also a statement that we cannot do everything we've been asked to do. It's a simple fact. So it's not that we're uncooperative, I don't believe. The question is we need guidance. What do you want us to work on? We can't do everything. And so we're asking for guidance.
Yeah, and we provided that guidance.
Yes, and we have made adjustments
right.
based on that guidance.
Good.
We have
okay.
listened to you
okay.
and made adjustments. However, and I don't know what Mr. Treanor is specifically referring to, but since that time, our situation has gotten worse. So that line is moving up, and that causes impacts because somebody's not going to get what they were expecting. And we are still completely willing to listen and take advice on what you want us to see us do next. And all I ask is that the Marine Region be given an opportunity to explain nothing's for free right now. So what are the costs of making an adjustment? That's all I ask. It's not that we're saying no. It's just we want to make sure you understand if we move this one up, something else has to drop off.
Know,
I mean, that's
I know,
unfortunately.
But you know what? Let me say something, Saki.
Sure. It's your meeting.
That is sort of a standard pat act answer that we get, and not necessarily. I'm not pointing at you, but from the department. So something else is going to have to take a hit in order for us to prioritize this. Now, if we were the legislature, you sure as hell would not be sitting there telling us that because they wouldn't accept that as an answer.
We tell them that too, except
well,
they don't accept it.
They don't accept it. So, but this body has been more than accommodating. And so when we ask for something, it should be done.
Right.
And you guys figure out how to do it, how to work out of the box.
But, you know, the only thing I'd add to that is that, you know, if understand things have changed, the budget picture's gotten worse, the bar moves. But if we never know about it, we can't. Maybe there's a way we can help facilitate it. Maybe there's a way we can, you know, go out and get more constituents involved in the process, get more volunteers. But the only time we ever hear about it is, look, we're at the point we just can't do it anymore. Sorry.
And that's not
saying, will you help us?
That's not good. And that's why I like your recommendation about the budget subcommittee, so we can kind of get into a little more detail. You know, for example, the MPAs. We're under a lot of pressure to continue with the MPA process. We don't have the money. We don't even have the staff. We are right now under serious pressure to keep moving, and we're being asked to make adjustments to continue MPAs. Well, that comes at a cost. If you give us the top 10 list, we'll do the top 10 list. If you know, it's just you have to work with
you
us
know,
here.
I think it was well after the Channel Islands. I think I told the NRDC representative, don't come before us in the future with ideas or the policies you want us to implement and taking from these guys over here who foot the bill without coming with some funding source. So maybe we go back to these folks and say, hey, you guys need to put up. If you want us to move forward, we don't have the money, then let us lean on them or ask them, hey, come up with some sort of funding source. You have a huge membership base out there. Why not go to them for some of this funding? So, I mean, let's start thinking a little creative. Let's start putting some of the onus on them. I mean, for them to come to us on a monthly basis and say, do this, do this, do this.
To be fair, they have come up with some ideas to fund continuing the work. The problem is it's the checks in the mail. And it involves a lot of legislative adjustments, which I'm not sure they can deliver on. So it's all very tentative. But
okay.
Good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can buy into all that. What I can't buy into is the commission took an action. And the commission took an action. The department agreed that was a good action. And our staff, Mr. Treanor, pursued that. And I think that, you know, if there's a budget problem and that's changed it, he deserves a response from the department when he does that. So,
yes, sir.
So we're not sitting here wondering what happened.
Yeah, and I don't know why he hasn't gotten a response, and I'll ask about that because, I'm not sure why he hasn't gotten one.
What you're saying is okay, but he deserves a response when he put in the request for
I agree.
Why he's not going to get that.
I agree, and I'll report back to the director to make sure you get a response promptly. I mean, getting back to kind of this whole issue of priorities and, you know, we need to sit down and talk about it. I mean, there's some cases there's help, like the urchin industry stepping up. That kicked that one loose. We're now, it's getting done. We're providing some oversight. You know, that's the kind of, in this climate, that's how we're going to move some of these things.
Yeah. Zeke Rader stepped up on herring.
Yeah.
The herring issue.
They're helping out on that. Huh? Wish there was a better story there, but, you know, you'll hear about that tomorrow.
Okay. All right.
But, yeah, we'll do what we can. And if you're having problems, I need to know. I didn't know he didn't get a response. So.
Now here's the letter dated April 10th, 2003. And we're in June. Soon to be in July.
We got a copy of that, and I just assumed that that had taken place.
Jim, give that letter to Zonka.
Okay. Moving along.
Am I up?
I don't know what I'm supposed to say here, but it appears that my appearing before the legislative committee to put across the commission's point of view and our letter of opposition to Mr. Kretz's bill has brought forth a letter from Mr. Kretz accusing me of violating the Bagley-Keene Act and a whole host of other issues, I guess. I'll leave it at that. To the point where Mr. Kretz feels that I ought to be reprimanded and probably publicly flogged. Mr. What's his name? This gentleman here.
Mr. Weakland.
Mr. Weakland.
Sir.
One more outburst from you, and I'm going to have you removed.
Yes, sir.
All right? I've had enough. I'm listening to you back there mumble, adding little comments. You know what? That's appropriate maybe in elementary school, but it's not appropriate here. All right? Now, we respect you and listen to your comments. I expect you to behave and sit down and be quiet until you're called upon. But one more, and you're banished from this hearing. Understand?
Yes, sir.
All right. So anyway, I want to bring that to your attention. I feel, as well as legal counsel feels, that we followed the appropriate guidelines, that I did nothing out of the extraordinary. But I wanted to open for discussion Mr. Kretz and see what Mr. Cunningham might have to add to this and see what you folks might feel. I've actually instructed both Mr. Traynor and Mr. Cunningham to respond in kind with a letter, also to follow up with a meeting face-to-face with Mr. Kretz and explain to him the facts of the matter as opposed to his innuendo and some falsehoods out there.
My view on the issue is that we as a commission had regularly talked about this piece of legislation. We've gotten updates on a regular basis in public forum. Had made known some of our concerns about the bill. I am very comfortable with the process. I mean, very comfortable with how we went about it. People had opportunities, ample opportunities in public hearings to give their views on the bill. And I feel very strongly that we as a commission, when we feel strongly enough about a piece of legislation, that we need to be able to respond to either in the affirmatively or in the negatively if we oppose it. And we should do that. I believe that it's the kind of thing that we do very sparingly, and I think we have adhered to that. But in my view, this the procedure that we used in this instance, I think, is fine. I feel comfortable, as in responding to the public about the way we did it.
No, I agree with Mike. As far as the Bagley-Keene Act goes, this was not an action of the commission, in any regulatory sense.
Right.
The commission commenting on legislature was just like any other citizen or group of citizens I do think that it's something we ought to do very sparingly, and as far as I can see, we have done it very sparingly. We don't often do it, but
I think we should have the right to address any legislation that's going to take away from what is traditionally our charge. And
And if we agree with it, fine. We'd make a statement in agreement. If we disagree, we'd make a statement in the negative.
And I think we should continue to do that.
Absolutely.
Not let this kind of thing deter us from that.
Mr. Kretz, have any kind of interesting punishment suggested for you?
Flogging?
There was
public flogging, maybe?
Yeah, I think he went quite a ways. So.
I hope we get noticed.
Mr. Cunningham?
You want to come and see it?
You don't want to be there.
With a fly rod.
If I might, as Mr. Ford has indicated, Bob Trainer and myself, Mr. Ford, just have been putting together a potential response on behalf of the commission or staff to try to address some of the factual misunderstandings. We'll kindly say that. The letter. And I do think there are some obvious misunderstandings about what happened and about the timing of what happened. As you also understand, Mr. Kress went further, though, and was asking for and received a published opinion of the Legislative Council's office, which, again, based upon the facts he presented, arrives at some conclusions. I think those conclusions can be considered accurate only as to the facts that were presented to him. I do think that one of the critical facts here, I don't think anybody ever contests that the Commission cannot speak to proposed legislation. I think the critical issue here was the timing on how we were to speak. I think the timing here was an unusual event. Normally, this Commission speaks as a voice following the public meeting where the issue has been discussed. Here, because of the nature of the scheduled hearings and the unfortunate nature of our scheduling of our hearings, there was a gap. We had a hearing in February, I think on the 6th and 7th, and we had a hearing in April, I think the 3rd and 4th. But Mr. Perez, AB 342, was going to have its first hearing on March 25th, I believe. That's at least when it was originally scheduled, and we did not know of, I don't think anybody knew of, that scheduling date at the February meeting. So when this matter was scheduled, what we're left with is, if this commission wishes to speak with any voice at all, we have very few choices. Many of them are, I guess you could call them, obstinate in nature, in that if we wanted to speak as one voice, we could convene a meeting, but we are required to have a 10-day advance notice of such a meeting. It's hard to do when you've only got 5 days' notice that the bill committee is going to be meeting and discussing this bill. We can call an emergency meeting, except by statutory law, emergencies are limited only to very specific events in the Intermediates Act. This does not qualify as one of those. We can perhaps call a special meeting, but again, there's a minimum noticing period for us to appear and proceed. I think the best we can do is to suggest that while normally this commission would like to speak with one voice as a result through discussion in public meetings, that it has in the past and it will in the future continue to delegate to its president certain business items that include time-sensitive response. In recent memory, we have done with a double-day time-sensitive litigation response, where the president of this commission resolved a question on behalf of the commission regarding time-sensitive litigation. I think that's considered responsible. That's considered a way to address the necessary elements of the business of the commission in the time frames the commission has. Historically, my memory goes back probably over 10 years, and I do recall at least one earlier time when the subject was specifically addressed, and a delegation was granted to the president of the commission to speak on behalf of the commission for certain very limited time-sensitive items. And I would consider this such a Mr. Kress, we are trying to assemble this letter. Mr. Flores looked at it, and thought you look at it. I'm not sure exactly what we wish to do this, but I think an appropriate response to Mr. Kress and an extension of an offer by clarification as to the details of what happened as a program.
Good. I think it is very appropriate.
But I'd like to ask perhaps to the commission, would you like staff then to go ahead and respond in what fashion? I did talk to Mr. Boyce yesterday, and I'll suggest to all of you that while I may have helped prepare the letter, it's probably not appropriate to go out underneath my signature. My understanding, and it's only from second-hand conversation, that our office has also been asked not to look at this debate. And as such, I find myself in two different positions. where my office formally may be involved, and I would therefore choose to perhaps limit my participation in much further this discussion. I have served, and I think reasonably served, as counsel to help you respond to Mr. Correa's letter, and I was instructed that I could so aid this commission in preparing a response.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So is it okay to... Well, I suggest that it goes out under Bob's signature, then executive director.
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, you can put it under my signature, but he's not going to believe me.
It's not wise. Not wise.
Yeah, so. Okay. We don't need a formal motion or anything for that, do we?
Do we need a formal motion?
Well, again, at this point,
the letter's going to go out under Bob's signature.
My sense of this is if we go to the extremes that Assemblyman Corretz suggests, that every time we want staff to do anything,
we're gonna have such a
mandate must come through a notice motion.
Right, thank you.
Following an agenda item in the commission's monthly meetings. I'm sorry to use this word, but that's ludicrous. We have received correspondence, or at least we have received a request to respond to correspondence. As you understand, Mr. Chris's letter was originally addressed to the governor and a variety of other people. The commission was notably absent on the CC list for that letter. My understanding is the commission, however, has been asked to respond, and I think it's appropriate, as with any other correspondence, to go ahead and have the executive director.
We do that all the time. I mean, my name goes out on correspondence all the time, as well as Bob's does, so.
It's the way of doing business, and I think it's appropriate.
We have to. I mean, if it'd bring us to a grinding halt, and we'd be in hearings 30 days a month.
But I did think it was appropriate that we go ahead and discuss this, make sure that the system of the commission will be contained in the letter that we forward and understand.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all.
Bob's that right?
Yes. As long as Commissioner Shuka goes with us at the meeting with Assemblyman Correa.
That would be my third. I think I've done my time.
Third time's a charm.
Yeah.
All right. Next item.
Thank you. Next item is legal counsel information type.
However, I'll use this opportunity once again formally and publicly remind this commission that we are a body governed by the Bagley Open Meeting Act. That means in spirit and letter that we do our business in public, and it is our intent always to do our business in public.
Absolutely.
I'll continue that reminder. I do that because I recall about the third or fourth time.
Yes, anymore. You do it.
But I do that because I think it's important that this commission maintain such a profile. And I think this commission stands proud in being probably one of the very first state agencies. And we're talking going back over 100 years, where public input has always been solicited and encouraged, and where this commission has functioned fully in the public life.
Even while at meals, you remind us.
Yes. Either that or you can go sit at a different table.
All right.
That's all I have.
Okay, with that.
Consent calendar.
That's tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow, okay.
You want to do executive session?
Yeah, it's the executive session. Just a little bit.
Okay. And as a follow-up, since we have no other business at this time, our meeting will reconvene at 8:30 a.m. in this facility. And pursuant to the Bagley-Keene Open Meeting Act and Government Code Sections 11126A1 and 11126E1, the Commission has the authority to meet in closed session. And we are going to do executive session, so we'd ask the audience to please leave.
Bob,
It's 10 o'clock on the agenda.
I
know, that was a typo. It's 8:30. It has been for 50 years.
Okay, Bob, can I suggest we make sure there's a sign that was up on the facility to make sure people know this?
Okay. Meeting adjourned. Thank you all very much. We're now going to executive session.
All right.
So I put a dollar in to get a drink and gives me about 25 back.
Yeah,
it's
one of my
quarters. Yeah, nice try. Did they rip you off?
Is that okay? Go give you a coat.